Next Step, Episode 149, April 14, 2011.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. With these podcasts, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net. Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to the next step. I think Susie said it all really nicely. This is a podcast about life and love. It's about Armodoxy. It's about going back in time to the earliest ideas of what faith is. You'll find that it's not a spooky thing. In fact, it's something that lets you take the next step in life. Here's the power. Here's the energy coming to you. This is brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net and part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Go. We've got to be running today. We are running so late, but by the time it gets out there, that's the wonder of podcasting, right? That's the excitement of podcasting. Kind of, you have some deadlines to deal with, but once it gets out there, it starts disseminating and having a life of its own and therefore having a time of its own. It's kind of like beyond space and time, isn't it? It's wild, huh? Think about it for a moment. It's beyond space and time. Anyway, welcome aboard. What is this? April 14? If you're in the United States, the government's giving you a couple extra days to pay your taxes. And special birthday greeting to my brother, Haig. He's got a birthday today. It is an exciting day. This morning I started it off out at Santa Monica, taking care of a little bit of business, and enjoying maybe about a half an hour out at the pier. Just kind of snuck away because my son Christopher is on spring break. We went up on the Ferris wheel. Can you believe that? Oh, what a view. What a view. And it's just such a beautiful Southern California day today. Just beautiful blue skies. And I'm in Epostle Studio East today, right now, because we are doing this virtually. Susie has left town. She hasn't skipped town. She's just left town. She's going to be producing this show remotely through her. Once we get it finished, she does some incredible magic with this podcast, with the MP3 that comes out there and gets it posted and streaming into different corridors of the world. I mean, it is really, when you think about it, it is mind-boggling. The number of responses that we get, the places that people are listening to The Next Step. We've got people down in South America, in Africa, in the Middle East, in Europe, and of course in the North American continent. Well, we hear from Canada and of course in the United States. I can't remember if we've ever heard anybody from Central America or from Mexico. But anyway, I digress. I hope I won't be doing too much of that. I am battling some kind of fatigue issue today, and that's part of the reason why we're a little bit late. But I got to tell you, my musas are in place. I am ready to go today because I've got a lot to share with you. A lot of stuff coming up, especially because next week happens to be the commemoration of the Armenian Genocide, and on top of it, it is the ultimate celebration, the celebration of life, the celebration of white, the celebration of victory. You're talking about Easter, of course, Father Voskin. You got it, man. I mean, like, what planet did you fall off of? I mean, of course we're talking about Easter. And that kind of, like, overshadows everything else. We're going to be talking about that because we had an interesting week with a lot of different issues, a lot of people coming up to us. And we, in fact, did this incredible interview on one of the Armenian TV stations, which is called Horizon. I believe it's one of the more popular ones. And do check it out. It should be, they do stream it on their website. Horizon, of course, is the Armenian for horizon. It's spelled the same, of course. Horizon, Horizon. It's like, you know, I always tell people if you... I shouldn't tell you this little trick, but you see, I serve in the Glendale area, and so most of my life is spent talking Armenian, speaking Armenian. In fact, this one little podcast that we have is kind of like this little digression. It's like to keep my wits going in English, too, you know? So we deal with a lot of families that have recently immigrated to the United States. A lot of, actually, you start thinking in Armenian, and sometimes people will come up to me and they'll talk and they'll use a word that you kind of like listen to and you say, wait a minute, I've never heard this word, you know, and you know that your Armenian isn't that bad and everything. And then you realize that it's just an English word. And it's been slaughtered or slanted, let's say, with an Armenian accent. So horizon becomes horizon, you know, or you've got a whole assortment of them that are sort of like not only anglicized, but they are Russified, you know, they are because of the political ties and because of geographically the closeness of Armenia and Russia. So you've got a lot of these anglicized words, these Russian words that creep into the Armenian language. And so a lot of times I say, like, you know, if you need to find a word, you know, just slant it up, and most of the time people will understand you, you know, like intellectual, intellectia, you know, or something like that. Some wild ones like that, presidential, you know, I mean, we have the word in Armenian, of course, you know, intellectual, mudavoragan, presidential, nakhakayagan, or a word that just kind of creeped into the Armenian vocabulary just a few years ago, normal. The word is normal, of course. And in Armenian, sovoragan, we have a word for it. Come on, folks. Armenian is a living language. But for some reason, you go up to somebody and you say, how are things going? Normal. You're supposed to think, okay, everything is normal, I guess. Anyway, it's funny how these things creep into our language. And then, of course, the sad reality is that once it does creep in, it's very difficult to take out. And I guess that's the most appropriate place where I can start today's podcast, is talk about the themes that we're going to be talking about. At what point do you clean up? At what point do you clean up the institution? At what point do you say, well, let it go? What's worth saving and what's worth discarding? I mean, these are big issues, and issues that I've struggled with all of my life as a priest, because you're serving the sacred institution called the Armenian Church, one that is not founded by people, but founded by God Himself. The Armenian Church, when we talk about the birthplace of the soul, it is not about, you know, putting yourself in the middle of Etchmiadzin or tying yourself to the land. It's tying yourself to the beginning of all time, of all creation, of all beginnings, of eternity. And so when we talk about Easter coming up next week as this celebration of life over death, it's not really just about an event that took place 2,000 years ago. It's about the power that you and I have, the power that has existed from the beginning of time, the power which was demonstrated by Jesus Christ, that despite all of the horrors, despite all of the evils, you can rise to a resurrection through the power of love. And this is where we came to during the week, and we've had so many different opportunities to share this that my mind is really spinning today. I've got to tell you, we've been on TV, We've been doing our broadcasts all over, up and down the net. We've been writing about it. We've been sharing about it. A few of the people inside the In Issues Ministry, we've been talking about it, sharing, kicking around ideas. And here we are. We are a week away from that incredible celebration. And I want to talk to you about it in very real terms today. Because, you know, I received a letter from the diocese today asking me to send any events that we are now, listen to this, it says any events out of the normal for genocide commemoration, send it to us so that we could publicize it. And isn't that sad that here you got this genocide, 1.5 million people. I mean, you can't even fathom that number. What are you talking about? You know, 1.5 million people being exterminated, wiped off of the planet. You've got the systematic annihilation of 1.5 million beginning on April 24th. I mean, what is 1.5 million? Can you even picture that in your mind? I mean, I'm sitting in a town called Pasadena, which is about 100,000. Are you talking about like taking this Pasadena, multiplying it times 15, and then wiping it all out? 1.5 million people. Do the calculation. Think about your town. How many people are living there? Then multiply it. And then annihilate it in your head. And it's unfathomable. And how could you say if you're doing a normal, something out of the normal? I mean, every commemoration should be out of the normal. Every commemoration should shock us that such evil did exist. And it shocks us that it does exist. And it exists because we have taken this lackadaisical approach to it. That's the sadness to it. Lackadaisical. We've just kind of kicked back and just kind of take it for granted. It's Armenian Genocide Commemoration. Well, here we go. April 24th. Come on, let's put up the flags. Let's be Armenian for a day. And that's why I really kick it around with you about this Armadoxy that we're just now discovering over here. It's beyond the ethnicity of being Armenian. It's something that puts it inside of your heart that justice is really something that is beyond ethnicity, that every one of us feels. In fact, next week when we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, I've shared this with you many times. I mean, who really understands that? I mean, how many of you passed by a cemetery and ever seen somebody come out of a grave? You haven't. I mean, unless you're into the zombie movies. But seriously, think about it. How can we relate to that? Resurrection. Who's ever seen somebody come out of a grave? You can't relate to that. But let me talk to you about crucifixion. Oh, we all relate to that, can't we? We all know what it's like to be betrayed. We all know what it's like to be mocked, humiliated. We all know and feel the pain of suffering for things that we haven't done, for no fault of our own. We've wanted to preach or do an act of love and have been paid back with a slap in the face. We can all relate to crucifixion. You see, and that's the point that kind of unites us as humanity. We relate to that crucifixion. So today when we gather and we talk about genocide, we talk about Easter, there's a multitude of concepts coming out. And what I'm finding is that this Armadoxy we've been preaching and talking about over here has put its finger right on the situation for the last several millennium. In other words, people have reacted to their suffering in a very positive manner, have been able to rise to the occasion because of this Armadox view of life. And we're sharing that with you. We're at that point right now where we're discovering it in one of the ancient traditions called the Armenian Orthodox Church. You strip it away from all of the garbage that's out there. You know, all of the things that they tell you about what the church is. And we're going to talk about that too in a few minutes too. You don't need to believe it. The Armenian Church is just something that you need to find. It's what Jesus Christ talks about when he says there is a merchant who goes out there and he's looking for the most beautiful pearl. And when he finds it, he needs to have it. He needs to be a part of that. That pearl needs to be a part of his life. And so he sells everything he has just so he can buy that pearl. Think about it for a moment. That's what many of us have done. We've basically sold everything. We've basically put everything on hold just so we can have that pearl. That pearl is the actual faith. It's not the building. It's not the building that stands there. It's that faith that comes to us from the beginning of time. A couple of days ago, I was in one of the big Armenian churches, and you look around, as is the custom in many churches, you know, it's decorated with names, people who have donated. And obviously, people give for different reasons, and obviously, when you build these buildings, you need to somehow recognize people in different ways. And I thought to myself, as I'm looking at all of these names and these beautiful structures and everything, how long is that going to last? Is that going to last a generation, 2 generations, 100 years, 200 years? God bless it, let it last for 300 years. But what did we just see? All of us, right in front of our eyes during the past year. You saw the earthquake in Chile. You saw the one in Australia. Just last month, you saw Japan. And then you saw the tsunami, which just basically toppled everything. And then at that point, you look up and you say, where are those names? And those names, if they're on a piece of a stone, on a plaque, they're gone. But if they're in your heart, if they're something bigger than those stones, right? If they're in the heart that you and I possess, it's something that nobody can take away. It cannot be lost. And my only wish is that, not that I'm not discouraging anybody, you know, if this is why you give, or this is why you've given in the past, God bless you, because it's important. There's all kinds of ways. I say it's important because when you give, you also are putting the seeds in other people's mind too. That when you lend your name to a project, you're also saying, hey, this is something that's important to me. So I'm not like, I'm not coming down on putting names up there. It was just a reminder, a cold reminder, that, you know, along with those names up there, we also have to remember that the most important reason for giving is that we want to place ourselves in this spiritual oneness with God. To be able to say that this is what matters in my life. I know about it, God knows about it, and that's enough for me. We're going to come back with a lot of talk about all kinds of stuff today. We're getting ready for this big celebration. We're going to kick it off with a song of the day, as we do every week. Today I am selecting something very special, which was given to me last week. It is from the Shoakin Ensemble, and I thought I'd pick out a song kind of like to celebrate the end of Lent. Yes, by the time you're listening to this podcast, Lent will be over. And I know you've been enjoying those Lenten journeys, but we are out of time to take a breath. How about this one to get us out of the Lenten season? Here is the Shoakin Ensemble. Shoraken Ensemble. That is a song called Tamir Aghabar. I thought it would be nice. It's a dance tune, of course, and, you know, it's the ending of Lent. We've got a few hours left for the Lenten period to end, and, of course, the Holy Week comes up, and I'm laughing because I'm thinking, okay, what am I saying? Okay, you've got a few hours to dance in between these two periods. Well, why not? I thought it would just kind of get our blood stirring, because you got to believe my whole life is a blood stirring. Blood-stirring life. I mean, there's so much stuff to going on, and you're saying, like, hey, this is the church you're serving, and what's going on over here? I want to talk about that in a few minutes, but we will definitely put the link to this album on our show notes. This song is off of the Armenia Anthology album, Shoraken Ensemble, and thank you, Anush, for that tune for today. But, you know, it's always amazing to me, the stuff that comes out of the Armenian church, different churches. I saw an invitation yesterday from one of our priests with very, you know, probably just very, very good motives. But it was filled with this scare tactic, you know, about like, look what's going on in the world and look what's happening. The movie industry's doing this. And you almost felt like you were somewhere in the Bible Belt or something, you know. And the way to relieve that is like, show up and get your feet washed. I mean, it just seemed like there was some kind of a disconnect that just made me feel like, you know, all of my life as a priest, 30 years I've been a priest, I've struggled with this idea of making that church relevant to people. And relevancy means that you have to be able to push the church to its limits where it is, because it is the body of Christ. It is not something that would go hide, right? I mean, just think about Jesus' ministry. It was a pushed ministry. When he came to the River Jordan and he began his ministry, and I'm saying this because what are we today? If the church is the body of Christ, you've got to believe that it's a continuation of that same ministry. It's only logical. I'm not talking theology, not talking philosophy. I'm talking about pure logic, okay? If we call the church, which we do, the body of Christ, then that body has to continue doing the work that the body does. And when Jesus came on the scene at the River Jordan, he began this ministry which was outreaching, which was a ministry that walked into the lives of people. He didn't sit under a tree philosophizing. He didn't sit at a computer terminal writing up notes. He actually went and touched people who were hurting. He actually went and hugged people who were in pain. He touched and healed people who were sick, ill, and he brought to life people who were dead. And he says, do the same. You're the body of Christ. What are you supposed to do? Just sit there and isolate yourself? Or are you supposed to be out there? I mean, in Luke chapter 4, he comes right after his baptism, after his 40 days, and he proclaims, this is why I have come to this world. The Lord has put his spirit upon me. He has ordained me to preach to the poor, to give sight to the blind, to set at liberty the oppressed. I mean, how much more clear does it have to be? That's what the church has to do, and not be isolated. And so this is what I've fought against for 30 years. And when the church has isolated itself, when it hasn't reached out to people. I mean, I remember running the camp program. It was very important to me that priests, this was a large program that we ran here in the Western Diocese for several years. And the idea of making the priest somebody who was accessible to the campers, especially to children, so that children could feel comfortable talking to a priest. I mean, you go through life, and here you have, right in your community, you have a priest. Shouldn't a priest be somebody that you could feel comfortable talking to? And so it irritates me when we take these steps backwards. Sometimes I see pictures, you know, priests out in the wilderness wearing collars, black robes. Yeah, that looks accessible. That looks very inviting, doesn't it? But you know what we're talking about here is not just a question of what you wear. It's the ability to reach out. It's the ability to become open to the possibility that we can learn from children. I mean, remember even Jesus, when they came up to Jesus and the centurion had come up and said, I have somebody who is sick, and just give the word. And what does Jesus do? He stands up ready to go. And the centurion says, no, you don't need to do that. He says, I have that kind of power where I order it and it's done. And I believe that you do the same thing. And Jesus is shocked at that moment. And he says, I haven't seen faith like this. I haven't seen faith like this. And so he stops from what he was doing. He is open to the possibility that there is a new way of perceiving life. And he says that your servant is healed. And in the same way, we have to be open to the idea that we can learn from children. I mean, what have we done in this world that is so great that we feel like, you know, everything that we have, we're ready to dump on them? There's a beautiful poster in my office. It is probably older than the hills. It was from the time when Apple Computer first came out, back, that's 30 years ago. And it says, it's an old Indian saying, and I love it. I have it in front of me to just remind me all the time. It says that we do not inherit the world from our parents. We borrow it from our children. And I think that shift is so important in our lives, that we understand that children have so much to talk to us about. And, you know, we're so consumed with all the negativity in the world. And it is negative. It is awful. You know, you see the Charlie Sheens, you see the Lindsay Lohans, and you realize that there's this incredible flow of information and events taking place. But you know what? You've got to take control of it at a family level. I've preached about this many times. You know, when, especially a few years ago here in this country, in the United States, there was talk about school prayer. I am completely against school prayer. What is that supposed to mean? I'm sending my kids to go to school to read, write, and learn, you know, learn arithmetic. What is it? The three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, that's what I'm sending my kids to, not to pray. Because, you know, there's a danger in that. People don't understand that. Okay, today it's my prayer. Tomorrow it's somebody else. Tomorrow it's some other prayer. It's to some other god, to some other gods, to some other system. Are you ready for that? This is what people don't do. They don't take the next step. They sit back and they say, oh, well, we need prayer in the school. Why? Relax, folks. Are you open to the possibilities? I doubt it. I doubt people are that open. And you say, well, it creates a better society. There's plurality and everything. Think about it, folks. Think about what you're saying when you say things like that. I mean, there's a whole slew of these kind of off-the-cuff remarks that people make. They talk about how bad the movies are, and how bad the media is, and how bad the internet is. Okay, are you ready to turn off? Are you ready to censor? Are you ready to get into a situation of, well, what most totalitarian regimes are? Are you ready to put a block on it to the point that you censor? And what gets censored at that point? Newtonian physics? Galileo, he was censored, right? I mean, haven't we learned from history that the free flow of ideas and information is a valuable one? In fact, in the United States, we call it an inalienable right. Life, liberty. I mean, that idea of liberty is a very important one. I believe that's what's been given to us by God. In fact, look at the passage that I quoted a few minutes ago, right? To set at liberty those who are oppressed. That freedom, that we are created in the image of God, so that we can create. We have that ability to create. I mean, that's a beautiful gift that's given to us by God. And so the checks and balances shouldn't be made by institutions. They should really be made through the family, coming together, sitting down and praying together, asking for God's guidance, but in an open dialogue with the children. Because what world have we created that is so great that you're willing to pass it along to your children? Remember that John Lennon song? I'll have Ken cue it up.
There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. working class hero is something to be.
To smile as we kill. It's so sad. It's so sick, in fact. But isn't that the way of the world? And that's what we're taught, you know, and that's what we're teaching people. We're teaching that there's some kind of a pride in this killing idea, that everything is resolved by killing. And that's why a couple of years ago I was so excited when young Armenians, and this is I think one of the unsung stories of victory among the Armenian people, but it was in the year 2003, I guess, what is that, 9 years, 8 years ago, that we organized a small group of young people to come together and answer the question, what does the genocide mean to you today? What is the genocide? Okay, here, 1.5 million people have died. These are your ancestors. These are your great-grandparents, and they have finished, and basically the world has forgotten about you. The world doesn't care about you, and the world is not answering the pleas for justice. So is there another approach to it? And what came out of that was this response called In His Shoes. Basically, how do we walk in the shoes of others? Because this is really the only way that we can answer genocide, is by feeling the pain of others, by letting ourselves admit that it happened without reaching out to anybody else to validate the claim, but at the same time to say that it's not that enough that we remember, but we need to do something about it. And so we can't just sit there looking at the past, but saying that we have to do something about today, what's going on today. And so since 2003, we've been working on this second level of genocide commemoration, the next step in genocide commemoration. And so everything that's coming together in this next few weeks really is the culmination of a lot of thought, a lot of activity since we started this In Issues movement. And I'm saying this because this past couple days, this last week definitely, we've been inundated with many people inquiring, and I'm just very happy to say that, you know, it's catching on. It's catching on. I mean, can you imagine that a letter came out from the diocese saying, commemorating the genocides? That S meant a lot to me. It meant that people are listening, right? That S, it means something more. It means that we're out of our things. That just today I read on one of the internet blogs and this Armenian newspaper magazine called Armenia USA, and the editorial in there, we are going to tell Obama that, you know, he lied to us. Folks, I mean, like, what are we talking about? Who's the we in this sentence? You know, the Armenians? Okay, do you really think that Obama, I mean, here, I mean, what did Albert Einstein say? Insanity is doing the same things over and over, expecting different results. I mean, how many times are we going to do this? A few years ago, it was Nancy Pelosi. Oh, Nancy Pelosi. You know, she even got up and said, yeah, I'm Armenian. I feel for you. I have Greek roots, or I don't know what it was at that time. But everybody was certain Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, she's going to pass it through. Genocide recognition. And when it came down to it, when Turkey just bumped her a little bit, ooh, she was scared. She was scared. And she just abandoned the Armenians. What do you think? What do you think, Obama? He's going to really care about this small group of people that are claiming something from 96 years ago? And so the In His Shoes movement is really saying, let's get beyond that. We know that it happened. We don't need an Obama. We don't need a president, whether it's a Bush, a Carter, a Clinton, a Reagan, whoever it was, who's sitting in that office. We don't need them to validate it. In fact, we don't need anybody else to say it because we know it's true. I mean, it's written, it's obvious. Morgenthau wrote about it. You want the United States proof? There it is. Your ambassador wrote about it. Okay, there's your United States proof. You want more proof of it? A sitting president, Ronald Reagan, acknowledged it as genocide. What more are we waiting for, okay? What we need to do is get beyond that and start talking about what's going on right now. You want to talk about genocide? Well, there's one taking place in Darfur right now. In the exact same situation. And you know what? There are people who are fighting us and saying, don't look at Darfur. Okay, don't look at Darfur. Close your eyes to that. They're saying we have enough problems in the community. And what are those problems? Well, they're saying that we have difficulties within the community getting acknowledgement. Acknowledgement for what? Are you making some money? Are you making your payments? Okay, you're better off than most of the world's population. You're not as good as some, but you're better off than most, right? The saying, I'm better off than most, not as good as some, okay? Can we live with that? Let's look at what else. There's so much to look at in life that you have the ability to really push yourself to limits, that you have this freedom in life to listen to this podcast. That's a step. You have the ability, actually, you have the means to listen to this. That means you're technologically connected. Okay, so you're better off than most of the people. Now, can you spread that wealth? Can you help out other people? That's what Christ calls us to do. And okay, you don't want to look at Darfur, take a look right inside of your neighborhoods. You want to look at a genocide? We're talking about drug addiction. We're talking about the rampant use of drugs, the popularization of drugs today, so that people take it. And you know, we talked a few minutes ago about what the media does and how the media is reacting. Now, I'm not going to do it as a scare tactic. I'm just doing it as a reference point. What are we seeing from the media? Well, we're getting this double mixed signal. This double mixed signal. It's like churches that do these banquets and fashion shows during the middle of Lent. I had one of our parish council members went to a church event at one of the other churches the other day, and she was just shocked. She came in, she said, we didn't eat anything. I said, what? They didn't serve anything? She says, all they served was kebab and meat products in the middle of Lent. She says, I didn't understand. How can an Armenian church do that? Well, isn't that a double mixed signal, right? And we keep doing that. We keep sending out different signals when the real signal should be one. As a church, you have only one signal to send out, love. And we're going to talk about this in the interview that we did on Horizon. I want you to catch that. Okay, we go into quite a bit philosophically because, you know, the interview asked me, where does this come from? And, you know, there is a Fedai slogan that it is only through weapons that we can find the salvation of the Armenian people. Mian Zenkovga Hayots Pergutyun. It is made popular in Armenian songs. Listen to this. He says, I am convinced, Hamosvadzem, vor miayn zenkov, zenk, there's your word for today, okay? Weapon. Miayn zenkovga, it is only through weapons that we can find the salvation of the Armenian people. Well, this is from the beginning of time. It is only through weapons. I mean, you want to find your liberation. You want to find your salvation. You need the tools. You need that weapon. And I told the interviewer, I said, I am that priest that is convinced that is only through the weapons that we can find the salvation of the Armenian people. Now, I have to add to that, that the weapon of my choice happens to be love. And that's a weapon that we haven't reached for yet. We haven't played that card yet. We have in the past. I believe that that is the reason why we are here today. Because people have opted for that weapon of love. That weapon of choice. But today it is imperative upon us. You want to find your salvation. Don't look for other people. Don't look for these Obamas. Don't look for the presidents, the prime ministers of these different countries to validate something that you and I know are true. Instead, look within and find that God is working within us through this incredible weapon called love. In His shoes, walking in the shoes of others. What does that mean? To walk in the other's shoes means you love them, you care for them. You're exerting everything, your power, your weapon of choice. And you're taking all of your past, which is giving you the strength to stand up, to choose that weapon, and you're using that weapon, well, yeah, to help others, but at the same time to liberate yourself, to find that salvation for yourself. You see, it's not a mixed signal. It's a single message. It's the message of love. In our immediate memory, since the Armenian Genocide. Gandhi used it. Martin Luther King used it. Now it's our turn. Yes, the children of the first Christian nation. Hey, there's a novel idea. The first Christian nation using the power of love. Wow! We can do it. And we're doing it right now. Hey, here's Ani with today's Bubbles. We'll be back in a few minutes and I'll be talking about, well, Easter and what we're going to be doing. Some incredible things coming up. Here's today's Bubbles.
Today's spiritual bubble is a teacher's paraphrase of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I could explain everything perfectly to my students, but did not love each one of them, I might as well be talking to an empty room. If I could find all the answers to educational problems and did not love, my efforts would be futile. If I could buy every kind of educational aid and sacrifice to do so, but did not have love for my students, it would be a complete waste. Love is patient when it is necessary to repeat a concept over and over to a student who is having difficulty. Love is kind when an irate parent accuses and berates other teachers or me. Love is not jealous when the other teacher has an entire class of well-behaved and extremely intelligent children, while mine are not so great. Love is not proud or boastful when my students improve greatly and really want to come to my class. Love is willing to yield my schedule and plans to fit the needs of others. Love does not scream at my class when they misbehave, but seeks to help them understand the importance of self-discipline. Love does not broadcast all of my students' problems and misdeeds to those in the lounge. Love keeps trying even when it seems the student will never understand long division or the difference between an adverb and an adjective. Teaching methods, bulletin boards, textbooks, yes, even computers, will eventually be discarded, but love is everlasting. These three things I have learned through teaching: endurance, patience, and love. And the greatest of these is love. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani. So appropriate, huh? The way to make love practical in your life. I mean, here's a teacher putting it. That was beautiful. That was a different approach. And I think it gave me an idea that definitely this is really a challenge for all of us, right? To put that passage. That's, of course, from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Take a look at that passage and then put it in terms of your own profession. Put it in terms of what you do out there. How is love real in your life? So that it's not just something out there. It's not just some kind of abstract idea. Take that abstract and then make it real in your life. Love is never rude. Love is kind. Love is patient. Well, how is it kind? How is it patient? And it's nice to say it's patient, but you know, like she said, you know, being patient, having that love when somebody's criticizing you, when somebody's looking down at you, to be kind and not rude, you know, that's beautiful. Ani, thank you for that message, and let's move it over to Easter. Love at Easter. Kovya Yerusalem. This is the hymn of Easter in the Armenian Orthodox Church. Kovya Yerusalem. Praise Jerusalem. And this year it's going to have a very special meaning for me. I've written about this, I've talked about this, because we have the opportunity to be able to proclaim that on a day that is traditionally we sing about Iverin Jerusalem, about the eternal Jerusalem. As victims, people look at the eternal Jerusalem as that message of hope, that despite our tragedies, we can look at Iverin Jerusalem, that eternal Jerusalem as a place where justice will be served, where there will be rest from our sorrows and our difficulties. This year, it is overshadowed by the power of a real Jerusalem, Kovya Jerusalem. Praise Jerusalem. Why not? Because this year, we have the opportunity to celebrate, yes, on April 24th, on the darkest day of human history, we have the ability to celebrate the brightest day in all of eternity, to celebrate the power of love over evil. Because what happened on Easter Sunday was something totally unexpected. You see, everybody thought that the story would end at the cross. Everybody thought Good Friday was the end of the deal. Because as I said a few minutes ago, it goes beyond our experience. Who's passed by a cemetery and seen people coming out? People don't come back from the grave. And certainly after that lashing, after that humiliation, and after being suffocated on top of a cross, yes, that was the execution. Crucifixion was crucifixion slow. It was a painful, miserable death because you suffocated. You literally suffocated. You couldn't breathe at that point, and then you would expire. And it was slow. It was inhumane. And adding to this, that here was the Creator, the one who had given breath of life to this world, as St. Nerses Shnorali reminds us, the same one who had given us the breath, was now being beaten to the point that the breath was coming out of him, that he would die up there on the cross. Nobody thought after such a death that there would be resurrection. But there was. On Easter Sunday, against all the odds, against all expectations, Jesus came out of the tomb. And the angel, we are reminded in the gospel, tells us, "Why are you searching for one who lives among the dead?" And this year it is even more pronounced that on April 24th, the day when people are looking for dead Armenians, the victims who are looking for solace and consolation in an eternal Jerusalem, are going to be praising, are going to be singing, "Christ has risen," are going to be praising Jerusalem, the true center of all faith, not a place on earth, but a place in the universe, a place where peace is there. Salam. Jerusalem. And so here we have this opportunity as Christians to be able to make this incredible statement to the world, unlike any other time. And I want to invite you. I want to invite you to get involved and plugged into your local church. But even more, if you're not plugged into a church, get involved in what we're doing over here. Okay, let me go through this. This coming Sunday is Palm Sunday. It is the beginning of Holy Week. Jesus enters into Jerusalem. What we're going to be trying to do, I don't think we're going to have it up by Palm Sunday, but the rest of Holy Week we will be streaming. So I want you to get on our website, epostle.net, and follow all of it throughout the week. Because the Armenian Church, the Armenian Orthodox Church, and when I talk about this, it's very important, because when I separate that idea of Armodoxy, what we're doing is we're really showing you what the church is in its true form. Not only commemorates, the Armenian Church not only commemorates Holy Week, but it actually lives through Holy Week. So when you come to church on Palm Sunday, you actually walk with Christ. On Holy Tuesday, the remembrance of the ten maidens, sometimes referred to as the ten virgins, comes to us from Matthew chapter 25. Read the story, and in just an incredibly beautiful service. I understand that our archbishop's going to be attending that day. You won't want to miss that. And like I said, if you're not in Glendale, do check us out at epostle.net. On Thursday, we have the institution of the Last Supper, Jesus saying, "Take and eat," and a reminder to all of us that here was the only person in all of history who was able to change everything. Remember the words, "Take and eat," that was spoken from Satan to the first person? Remember what was said to the serpent, from serpent to Eve, "Take and eat." What Eve said to Adam, "Take and eat." And those words were the words of condemnation. And Jesus turned it around and made them the words of salvation. The only person who was able to do that and say, take and eat. This is my body. That's next week. Next Thursday. Be sure to tune into our podcast. It will be about that. It will be about how incredible that change can be. In the evening, we wash the feet of the people. Now, there's all kinds of cutesy traditions that people are doing all over the place. We do it in the Armenian Orthodox tradition. We wash the feet of all the people. Because that's what it says in the book. And again, let's revert to logic. Forget about what's in the book and everything. Go to logic. Do you know why Jesus washed the feet of only 12 men? Because that's all that was with him. That evening, that's who was in the room. Do you think that if there was a 13th, he'd say, oh no, I'm sorry, quota is 12. Do you think that if there was a woman in the room, he'd say, I'm sorry, only men's feet? No. And so, in the same logical manner, at our church, the priest kneels down, and I will wash the feet of anyone who comes forward. What's the purpose of it? To remind us that as the high priest, as Jesus, the creator of the universe, those same hands that had created life out of nothing, were now washing the feet of his creation. And it reminds me and the congregation that, hey, I may be the first servant of this small parish, of this ministry, but I am a humble servant. I am one that has to realize that in front of everyone, God is the greatest. That I need my humility. I need to be humbled. And each of us finds that humility. That same evening, we have a service called Chavarum. Chavarum is the darkness, the order of darkness. It gives us a chance to know what life would be like without Christ. As we read the Passion narratives, we go through each of the stories, and all of a sudden we realize that we are left in darkness. What happens when we betray our Lord? When we turn our back to the Lord? What happens is we find ourselves in complete, utter darkness. On Holy Friday begins our fast for Darfur. We kick it off at the noon hours, and we need people to pray, we need people to donate. Because this is a genocide that's happening. We're going to be fasting. I need you to fast wherever you are, but keep in touch with us. Drop me an email right now at feedback@epostle.net and let me know you're going to be doing the fast with us. We'd like to keep you informed and keep in touch with you throughout the fast. On Holy Friday, we recount the crucifixion of our Lord. And we recount that, yes, the Armenians were crucified. We recount that, yes, the Darfuris are crucified. In fact, we recount that everyone, at one point or another, has been crucified, but it's not the end. Even when on Friday evening we have the tomb set up in the church, you will find that we go under the tomb to remind ourselves that we enter the tomb with Christ. The Christian has to enter the tomb with Christ. It's called to enter the tomb with Christ. But on Saturday evening, we have the Easter Eve service where the proclamation is made that Christ has conquered death. Christos haryavi merelots. Christ has risen from the dead. And that evening we break the fast. We break the fast for Darfur. And remind ourselves that this was an exercise that we went through to remind ourselves of the pain, but that we can conquer even the evils of genocide, of war, through one solid weapon of choice. That there is only one salvation for all of us. And it is the salvation that he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And what is that way? Well, he said it. I am. Who is that I am? Love. God is love. Jesus is love. Love is the way, the truth, and the life, and it conquers all of the evil. Even the despicable ones. The ones that we can't tolerate. The ones that just seem to be there forever. They're there forever because we allow them to be forever. On Easter Sunday, I'm inviting you to join us, definitely in the morning. It'll be at 8 a.m. Pacific time. So that gives you an opportunity, wherever you are in the world, to join us, really. It's going to be beautiful. We're going to do a very special Easter morning service, which will accent the resurrection. That will be on April 24th at 8 a.m. Please join us at apostle.net. We're going to have musician Gor Mkhitaryan with us, a very special message, and we're going to be showing the very special clip that we sent out to Darfur. It is Armenian genocide survivors talking to genocide survivors in Darfur. You will not want to miss it. It is an Easter like no other. And we're going to make that this special Easter. So please join us throughout Holy Week at apostle.net. Join us not only by tuning in, by putting in that URL, but by praying with us, by contributing with us, contributing to end the pain and suffering that is so prominent in these refugee camps. We've got all kinds of material. I invite you to join us at inhisshoes.org as well as epostle.net. And definitely join us here on this podcast, The Next Step, next week and always. We have one solid week of Easter week podcasts. Tomorrow you should be able to pick up the last podcast for the Lenten journey, and then begins the Holy Week podcast, okay? One for every day of the week. They're small little 5-minute, 10-minute little instructions, guidance to get you through that week. It should be a week of fasting, a week of prayer, a week of meditation, a week of outreach. Christ has risen from the grave. Don't make it just a saying. Don't make it your happy Easter little greeting. Make it something that's living in your life and in the life of your family. Here we are, beginning of Holy Week. I wish you all the best. God's blessings in all of your homes. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you on the net at inhisshoes.org as well as apostle.net. For the wonderful crew who I know hasn't abandoned me, although it may seem like that. For Susie, our producer. For Ken, our engineer, for Ani with her bubbles, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week to take the next step. Hey, a little more of Grandma's coffee. That's great, you bet.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other offer.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.